This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Sudan's Transitional Military Council is to publish its own draft constitution on Monday after disagreeing with parts of one proposed by Alliance of Activists and Opposition Groups.
That's reporter Naba Mohadeen on efforts to negotiate Sudan's military and opposition groups. Details coming up also. As the Muslim holy month of Ramadan starts, Libya's commander Khalifa Haftar has told his self-styled soldiers to fight harder to capture Tripoli. And the U.S. military is training Cameroon's military on first aid techniques and medical evacuation to reduce battlefield deaths. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story... Sudan's ruling Transitional Military Council has said it will publish its own suggested constitutional draft after disagreeing with some points in the opposition's version. A revised constitution is part of a negotiated efforts to form a joint military-civilian council before elections. But as Naba Mohadeen reports from Khartoum, protesters remain skeptical.
Sudan's Transitional Military Council is to publish its own draft constitution on Monday after disagreeing with parts of one proposed by Alliance of Activists and Opposition Groups. A spokesman for the TMC, Shamsuddin Kabashi, at a news conference Sunday, said while there was some dispute, there was still room for negotiation. For us, it's a good draft. It has many points. We agree on it. With them, protesters, there are a lot of points of disagreements, and that can be handled with negotiations between us and them. The Declaration of Freedom and Change Forces Alliance sent the draft on Thursday to the military. Sudan's protesters have been camped out at the defense ministry since April 6, demanding a return to civilian rule after 3 decades under President Omar al-Bashir. The military ousted Bashir on April 11 and declared a transitional military council was in control for up to 2 years before elections. But protesters like Mutaz Wali are skeptical that the TMC is willing to hand over power. He says that the TMC doesn't understand that its role is to deliver power. Instead, it's starting to act like a real transitional government, says Wali. The TMC is speaking about enacting laws while the constitution is disabled, he says. The military council agreed with opposition groups last month to form a joint council to lead a 2-year transition period to elections. But the two sides disagree about which should have a majority on the council, the military or civilians. Sudan's demonstrations erupted in December over the high price of bread and fuel, then quickly morphed into calls for Bashir to step down. The military says it put Bashir in federal prison and he will face justice at home, not at the International Criminal Court, where he is wanted for alleged war crimes in Sudan's Darfur region. Sudan's prosecutor general said Bashir was questioned on Sunday over suspected money laundering and financing terrorism after large sums of foreign currency were found in suitcases in his home. Naba Mohadeen for VOA News, Khartoum.
Commander Khalifa Haftar appears to have brushed off the UN's call for a week-long ceasefire in Libya to start the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, instead telling his self-styled Libyan National Army to fight harder. The battle for Tripoli has already killed at least 432 people, injured more than 2,000, and set another 50,000 fleeing their homes. The UN issued its ceasefire call yesterday. Hours later, Haftar issued an audio statement urging his forces to teach the enemy a greater and bigger lesson. He did not mention the UN ceasefire call, but pointed out that he had fought during the holy month in the past. The battle for Tripoli pits Haftar's eastern forces against the UN-supported government in the capital. Haftar has won some foreign support by claiming his goal is to root out Islamic extremists. South Africa's ruling African National Congress, or ANC, has been hit by almost a decade of high-level corruption, soaring crime rates, mass unemployment, state inefficiency, and a breakdown in the delivery of basic services to millions of people. Yet, with just days to go before national elections, surveys indicate the party will get another term. The ANC has won every election since South Africa's first democratic polls in 1994, even with diminishing margins. In Johannesburg, Darren Taylor takes a look at the state of the ANC ahead of the election.
The ANC's election song eulogizes current party leader, President Cyril Ramaphosa. Former ANC MP and political analyst Melanie Verwoerd says she witnessed the reign of the man Ramaphosa replaced just over a year ago, Jacob Zuma, with sadness, anger, and disappointment.
When your leadership gets, if not corrupted, very close to corrupted, that infiltrates the rest of the movement, and particularly when people feel that they can act with impunity, that there will not be any repercussions for them doing certain things, in fact, that they will get rewarded for it.
Fitz University Vice Chancellor Adam Habib says Ramaphosa seems to be committed to better governance, but that the ANC remains shockingly inept at running the country. It's however very good at using its black empowerment model to enrich a few of its favorite business people, says Habib. Voters punished the ANC for its failings at local government polls in 2016 when it lost three cities to the opposition. The director of South Africa's Institute for the Study of Democracy, Professor Stephen Friedman, says the ANC has never been weaker or more racked by factionalism, winning just 54% of the national vote in 2016, its lowest share ever. And he points out that ANC leaders have been taking one another to court to settle political disputes, something that never happened before Zuma.
I do think the ANC is in a longer-term decline. It's lost the support of the black middle class, and having middle class support is very important to the political party which wants to govern. I don't think that means that it's necessarily in trouble this time around.
The latest surveys show about 60% of voters will still back the ANC. Friedman says growing numbers have faith in Ramaphosa.
They're not naive. They don't think that Ramaphosa has a magic wand. They don't think that he's going to get rid of all the corruption. But they think that he's going to get rid of enough of the corruption to make it possible to vote again for the ANC.
Habib says South Africans are desperate for an alternative to transcend the Zuma years, and Ramaphosa is the only credible alternative.
The other element that will save the ANC is the failure of the opposition, that they have been so inept, that they have been so incapable of rising to the occasion.
Verwoerd feels that the erosion of the ANC under Zuma has overshadowed its remarkable achievements.
We need to remember where we were pre-94, what a desperate country this was. Transitioning us from a country on the brink of a civil war to a peaceful transition with one of the most liberal continents in the world is still something that we shouldn't just scoff at. It's a major thing that happened.
Verwoerd says while it's true that the ANC has let the country down recently, it's also true that millions of poor people now have basic services, such as housing, because of the ANC.
That just about meets the new demand. It doesn't actually deal with the backlog of all the apartheid years. So there has been major socioeconomic changes in this country, but it's just not been enough because the problem has been so big.
Opposition parties are desperately trying to stave off another sweeping ANC victory with this message. Almost the entire party, including Ramaphosa, stood by while Zuma and his followers allegedly plundered taxes. So, does the ANC deserve another term? I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Even as Mozambique struggles to recover from two devastating cyclones, officials are warning that the poor country could face similar weather in the future. Bridget Holm, director of the Mozambican Non-Governmental Development Organization, blamed the strength of the two storms in part on warm sea temperatures. It is the first time that Mozambique has been hit by two huge storms just 6 weeks apart. She told the French agency that the work must be done to reinforce homes and other structures and strengthen infrastructure. As Mozambique seeks to clean up amid ongoing rainfall and a cholera outbreak, it also has to plan for the future. The U.S. military is training Cameroon's military on first aid techniques and medical evacuation to reduce battlefield deaths. Cameroon estimates that one-fourth of all soldiers killed fighting separatists and Boko Haram terrorists could have been saved with better care. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
29-year-old soldier Pumje Amidu has been getting treatment for fractures since last October at the military hospital in Yaoundé. Amidu says he barely escaped death when separatist fighters attacked his base, leaving one of his colleagues dead and two others wounded. He says what he remembers is that he bled profusely and had serious wounds on his left leg, stomach and right arm. Amidu's life was saved when a Cameroon military helicopter rushed him to the hospital. But others were not so lucky. In recent years, about 117 soldiers have died from wounds that would not have been fatal had they received the correct first aid, according to Cameroon's military. That's about one-fourth of all Cameroonian military deaths in the battles against English-speaking separatists and the Nigerian militant group Boko Haram. U.S. military advisors are working to prevent future deaths by training soldiers to provide better care for the wounded. Major Mohamed, who did not give his first name, is one of the U.S. trainers. He says the course on medevac, medical evacuation, includes evacuating casualties by air, known as casevac.
We talked about the different levels of casevac. So you have your own legs. You can move the patient yourself. You have different platforms that you can use. Make sure they're not bleeding while they're being transported.
In February, the U.S. command announced it was cutting some security assistance to Cameroon following allegations that Cameroon's military was committing human rights violations. The U.S. says despite the reduction in military aid, relations between the two countries are good. The director of Cameroon's military health, Colonel Abeng Mozo, says those ties are shown by the U.S. medical training.
La coopération militaire entre les États-Unis et le Cameroun se porte très très bien.
He says the training is an indication that military cooperation between the U.S. and Cameroon is excellent. That is the reason the U.S. military has come to train their Cameroonian peers, says Mozo, to save lives and prevent deaths in different battlegrounds. 30 Cameroonian military staff received the U.S. training this week and will pass on the knowledge to their colleagues. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
19 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Algeria's military-run transitional government has taken another swipe at former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's administration by arresting his brother and two generals who served as top former intelligence officials. The military has been trying to quell ongoing peaceful protests that led Bouteflika to step down a month ago amid a backlash over the announcement that he would seek a fifth term in office. His brother, Saeed, was seen as a behind-the-scenes power broker, and he and the two generals were charged with conspiring against the state. Last night, state TV showed all three entering the military tribunal, a rare moment for men who were rarely seen in public. Several of the country's richest men are being investigated for alleged corruption in a probe that has also led to questioning of the former prime minister and the former finance minister. In Zimbabwe, the Public Order and Security Act, also known as POSA, has been used for decades to crack down on activists and ordinary citizens. Zimbabwe, under the leadership of President Emmerson Mnangagwa, has promised to reform the country, including doing away with oppressive laws such as POSA, which has been repealed pending replacement. Reporter Kuzai Zenawashi has more details.
Kudahove is the Media Institute of Southern Africa legal officer. He explains POSA.
POSA, or the Public Order and Security Act, was an act which was introduced in the early 2000s to sort of control how and when and under what circumstances people met in public spaces.
Valentine Maponga is the communications officer for Veritas, a local non-profit organization that provides information on the work of parliament and the laws of Zimbabwe and makes public domain information widely available. He explains how the new maintenance of peace and order bill will be different.
We have gone through the bill and we have realized that only about 7 clauses out of the 23 that are being introduced have got something new that's coming in. The rest actually almost like word for word. They are quite identical from POSA, so the changes are quite cosmetic.
The bill does away with the need to always carry official ID and instantly present it when requested by police, but one can present their ID within 7 days. The bill as it is retains the oppressive nature of its predecessor, POSA. Maponga gives an example.
You need a notice for holding a demonstration. You need to provide information as to the exact location of the demonstration and the entire route that is to be used during that procession. One also needs to provide the number and type of motor vehicles that will be at that demonstration.
He adds that some of the required information, such as number and type of cars, is information that may not be available prior to the demonstration. In light of the recent deployment of the army, the bill says only the president has the powers to deploy the defense forces, and upon deployment, the president will be obligated to notify the parliament within 7 days, a move that has been widely welcomed. Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament business and other political developments. He says citizens have a chance to change the bill.
The bill is now open for debate when parliament will start to do public consultations and incorporate people's views. In the meantime, ordinary Zimbabweans can contribute to the bill by sending their comments to the clerk of parliament. This is the chance that people can actually influence the bill before it's tabled before parliament.
Dodo says people can reach the clerk of parliament through the email address on the parliament website or write mail addressed to the clerk of parliament. Going forward, he urges people to speak with their parliamentarians about the bill so their views will be factored in during parliament debate. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
With Zimbabwe's economy weakening, there are increasing murmurs of dissent. In response, the government is clamping down on private organizations. The country's rural teachers are among those targeted. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Last week, four amalgamated rural teachers union of Zimbabwe leaders were hauled from a workshop in Harare by unidentified individuals suspected to be state security agents. 7 hours later, they were dumped at Harare Central Police Station. The R2's leaders were rounded up in Greyston Park, where they were having a workshop on facilitating adult education. They have been charged with participating in gathering with intent to promote public violence, breaches of peace, or bigotry. The teachers say the workshop was about educational techniques with an explicit emphasis on the need for peaceful conflict resolution and non-violence. The Union Secretary General, Robson Chere, was among those arrested.
They dragged us into their cars, which had no plates, and then they took us to the CIO department. We were tortured by these guys from the Central Intelligence Organization. They were torturing us, asking us the reason why we were having that kind of meeting. Then after several hours of torturing, that's when they surrendered us to the police CID law and order, and we were charged with the Section 37 of the Criminal Codification Act.
Government critics say the abductions signify the government's fears of civil unrest due to the deteriorating economic crisis. Chere says while the meeting was about educational techniques, the teachers have broader economic concerns.
We are not making ends meet. We are failing to even buy basic commodities for our family. We are failing to pay school fees for our children at the school that we teach. This is very embarrassing. And we are saying to the government, look, we need a living wage, which is according to the poverty datum line. But they are failing to do that, and they are responding by unleashing violence and persecuting us as the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. And we are not going to be silenced by this. We are going to...
A human rights lawyer, Doug Cotter, was at the union gathering and has been charged alongside the teachers.
I need to clarify that the four teachers were abducted. They were not arrested. There are legal parameters for what constitutes an arrest. But where... unidentified men break into a property, stuff people into vehicles without identifying them, then take them to an unidentified room and interrogate and torture them for hours, where people are told that they do not have rights, that no one knows where they are, where their phones are switched off. And under the cover of that that obscurity, gross human rights abuses are perpetrated. That cannot be called an arrest. We do need to be absolutely clear that is.
Colted calls the charge against the teachers spurious.
The basis of that charge is in connection with a meeting the teachers were at, but really is utterly absurd when you consider what the meeting was really about.
Many political analysts say that at the heart of Zimbabwe's problems is an economy that has seen prices for basic goods double or triple in recent months. Bakizanani Dube is a political analyst.
The thing is, let's look also at the economic situation.
Yeah, let's focus on the money.
Yeah, already the teacher is getting very low to begin with. From here, from town, going to the rural areas, itself, the fares are very expensive. And then let's look at the buying that happens in the rural areas, especially Matabeleland. Most of the shops in the rural areas no longer accept the bond note. They want the rand. But looking at how much the government has to think twice about this currency. They have to think about paying teachers actually in the forex that is needed per the region.
The economic crisis in Zimbabwe is becoming a trigger for various civil groups to launch protests. The government, however, has vowed to crush rebellion, and there is a heavy police presence in capital city Harare. Church leaders in the country have called for national dialogue between political parties as a means to help resolve what commentators call the trust and confidence deficit, which is critical for an economic turnaround. Reporting with VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehis Wuhib in Washington.
sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.